Welcome to 360 Degrees of Healthcare with Dr. Stan, an in-depth look at our industry from our very own Chief Medical Officer, who will talk with other medical and industry professionals on the changing and evolving landscape of the healthcare system from the inside.
Thanks for joining us. My name is Stan Schwartz. I'm an infectious diseases physician with decades of experience in healthcare as a student, a teacher, a fellow, a researcher, a practicing physician in both solo and group practices, a health system executive, and now a healthcare entrepreneur, and as I get older, as a patient. I want to share my 360-degree view of healthcare with you. My thanks to Zero Studios for support of this podcast. So most companies have legal counsel either in-house or readily available, but many don't have counsel from a physician. So why can physicians in the role of a physician executive help a company through population health initiatives that grow a culture of health and wellness? How does a company seek a physician executive? What skills and experience should they look for? With the cost of care restraining employee pay and eroding profits, what exactly can a physician executive do to help? My guest today is Raymond Fabius, MD. Dr. Fabius is an experienced physician executive who's worked with many large American companies, including General Electric's Global Health Plan, Walgreens, Thomson Reuters, Cigna, Truven Analytics, and others. He's also authored 5 textbooks, including the leading textbook on population health. Ray is currently the co-founder and president of HealthNext, an endeavor focused on helping corporations build a culture of health and well-being. I've known Ray for several years as we both served on the Medical Director Advisory Council of the National Alliance of Healthcare Purchaser Coalitions. Hey, Dr. Fabius, thank you so much for joining us today. And I've got a lot of questions for you, and I really want to pull that experience out of your brain. Let's start off by asking a question about a term that you've used a lot, which is physician executive. And I think a lot of folks aren't going to understand that. What exactly is your concept of a physician executive in the business sense?
Yeah, first, I want to thank you, Stan, for the opportunity to share thoughts with you today. And it's a pleasure to speak about issues like the issue of a physician executive. A physician executive is very different than a physician. Most doctors are trained to take care of patients one at a time. A physician executive is actually trained to take care of an entire enterprise or an entire company or an entire population. And in order to do that, a physician executive is very well versed in the science of population health, which is an emerging science on how to treat a whole population as if it's one patient, but also really needs other significant skills like leadership skills, operational excellence. They need to be very facile with data and have the ability to analyze data. They have to at least understand the importance of project management, levels of prevention, patient management, and more recently, the evolving connection between the health of a workforce and the workforce performance.
So what does a physician executive do? And if, let's say, I run a company with, let's say, 500 or 600 employees, I've got 1,000 covered members on my health plan, how often will I be consulting my physician executive?
Well, that question is a bit challenging without having more information. So if the company that you're referring to is in manufacturing and has significant obligations and regulatory requirements in regards to occupational health, then that physician executive needs to spend more time inside the organization. And if the organization, and perhaps we'll talk more about this, Stan, but if the organization really aspires to be a best practice culture of health and well-being company, then they'd be inclined to spend more time with their physician executive. A good starting point is to have at least 1 hour a week or the equivalent of 1 hour a week of time spent with their physician executive to at least provide them with overview guidance on a number of issues. And so you were earlier asking, you know, what roles do the physician executive play? Well, ultimately, it would be great for the physician executive to help the enterprise understand their common health risks and their common conditions, and even to develop a methodology to measure the total illness burden, the total risk burden of populations in an effort to be able to show over time with appropriate program development that we're helping the workforce and their families with reducing their health risks and with managing the conditions that they have.
Does a physician executive get involved in any medical decision making? For example, do they, if the health plan has a denial for pre-authorization or somebody wants an exception to an exclusion, does the physician executive make any decisions on behalf of members or on behalf of the company?
Well, nowadays, as you may know, the appeal process that's available through insurance programs and health plans actually has three levels of appeal independent of a physician executive. So generally speaking, the physician executive doesn't get involved in an individual case, but they certainly are involved in establishing the appeals process and making sure that there are ample supports for the patient who's appealing a coverage decision, and there's opportunities for actual advocacy and navigation through that process. And so again, the physician executive is more involved in making sure the process flows well for all of the people inside the population they're serving rather than an individual patient. With that being said, of course, you know, as the physician executive becomes more well-known inside an organization, as they build deeper relationships with leadership and management, it's not unusual for a physician executive to get a call about an individual case to help provide guidance on how that patient may how that patient may get the most out of the healthcare delivery system. That doesn't mean that the physician executive is actually examining the patient or sending them a bill, but most physician executives are pretty astute at understanding the best way to navigate what otherwise is a very complicated healthcare system.
Does the physician, well, did when the world got turned upside down by COVID, how did that change the need for physician executives? And what did they bring to the table at that point, especially when the science was so much in flux and nobody knew exactly what to do in the beginning?
Well, let me first tell you a story, Stan. I was the global medical leader for General Electric during the first COVID epidemic. Fortunately, that epidemic actually didn't reach our shores very much because it wasn't as contagious and it was more confined. But there was a massive outbreak in China and Southeast Asia. And at the time, I was responsible for, I'll say, about 60,000 employees in those regions as the global medical leader. We didn't know what the first SARS was at all. We didn't know whether it was a bacteria, a virus, a fungus. And so the what I learned from that experience, which I leveraged in during this COVID pandemic, is are two things. One is until you know more, you should be recommending overdoing things. So for example, I was asked how often should the elevators and the cafeteria tables be wiped down? And my answer was, well, how often can you do it? Can you do it every hour? Can you do it every couple hours? Until we know better, wiping things down with a disinfectant was an important first step, not only in terms of trying to prevent spread, but also in terms of demonstrating to the workforce how much you cared about them. The other learning that I had was that information is therapeutic. And patients really do trust their own doctor with information. And so that's a good source, but they also do trust their employer. And so when I was the global medical leader at GE during this first epidemic of what we called SARS-1 or COVID, we were frequently communicating to the workforce as we better understood the issues. And then we were actually one of the first to develop a screening tool to decide which employees can come to the workforce and which ones can't. And, you know, we translated into Chinese three questions, which is, are you coughing? Do you have a fever? And is anybody else in your family that you're living with have a cough or has a fever? And if the answer to these questions is all no, you can come to work. Of course, we became more sophisticated with the screening tools that we developed with this more recent pandemic. But, through this story, you can see the very important role that a physician executive plays in pandemic response. But it also they play an equally important role with pandemic preparedness. And during my tenure at General Electric, we actually ran desktop drills to pretend that we were dealing with a pandemic in one of our regions or in one of our work sites. And how would we take care of that, you know, with skill and quickness?
Did the fact that the science changed so much in the beginning, you know, when we were washing vegetables and wiping down doorknobs, was that a stress on the physician executives, and did they lose any credibility as, you know, so many people started to look askance at the CDC guidance when it changed?
Well, you know, one of the important skill sets that a physician executive should have is humility and also honesty. I've always been very careful to express whatever I express as this is what we know presently, but always with an eye at understanding that as we learn more, we're likely to change some of our recommendations. And so I was very quick to provide that to all of the clients that I was serving as their chief medical officer. And as you know, I also play a role as the medical director of the Greater Philadelphia Business Coalition on Health. And I was a frequent participant in webinars early on, but all the time saying, this is what we know now. As we know more, things are likely to change.
If a company is looking for a physician executive, what attributes should they be looking for? What kind of training? What kind of experience? What kind of attitude and aptitude?
Well, I think we've talked about some already. Clearly you have to have excellent leadership skills, and I believe you have to have very good public speaking skills because you may not be playing a much more than a part-time role. You need to educate and clearly articulate the intentions of the programming that you're recommending and supporting. So influence skills become very, very important, but equally important is an ability to work with people and be part of a team. And in the early days, physician executives learned on the job, more than with sophisticated, let's say, academic training. But nowadays, it's possible to not only get your MD, but get an MBA or get a master's in public health, or now there's master's programs in population health. certainly an employer would benefit from having a physician executive who's already served as a physician executive for many other companies and is experienced in that domain. I like to think of it as a separate specialty, Stan. I think it's like orthopedics, or it's like being a gastroenterologist. This is a specialty inside of medicine to be a physician executive.
You know, we use the, you and I use the term quite readily, population health, but can you just give us a one or two sentence overview of what population health means to an employed population and a employed plus dependent population?
Well, Stan, thank you, because this gives me a chance to plug my book, which I feel very comfortable doing, because I want you to know that all of my royalties go to the College of Population Health at Thomas Jefferson University, where I have taught in the past and where the book emanates from. And when people ask me, how do I summarize the book in a few sentences, I would say this, that a comprehensive effort in managing the health of the population takes an equal focus into these five pillars. So a great program in population health management works hard to keep the well people well, to reduce health risks for the people who have them, to make sure that the population has rapid access to care when they have an acute illness so it doesn't become chronic, to help people that already have chronic conditions mitigate potential complications of their disease or condition, and then lastly, for people that are challenged with really complex or catastrophic diagnoses or conditions, that they have a support structure that increases the likelihood that they get to centers of excellence and the best care that can possibly be offered for their treatment. You know, what I'm talking about in that realm are things like cancer. You know, when someone has a cancer diagnosis, it's so important to get them to a cancer center that takes care of lots of people that have that condition and have a lot of experience in the potential complications of the cancer itself or the treatment that's involved.
So you know the value, but there's going to be some people listening who say, you know, I run a company, I got a lot on my plate, I give them a good health plan. Why do I need to be involved in that? I mean, can I just let the doctors and everyone else I pay take care of those problems? Why is that burden on me, and why should I pay attention to it?
Well, there's remarkable research to support the notion that it makes great sense to invest in the workforce. Most employers say that their most important asset is their people, but very few companies make the kind of investment into their population health, into the population health of their workforce, that actually displays that. And yet, they may be spending a considerable amount of money in other aspects of prevention and rejuvenation. I'll tell you a story. I was working with a client who was asking some of the same questions, and I was trying to get them to allow their employees to go off the line in this paper manufacturing company so that they could get a blood test that we call biometric screenings. And so they could better understand their, we like to call their numbers, you know, their blood pressure, their blood sugar levels, their cholesterol levels, and I'll say even their weight versus height, something we call their, you know, body mass index. The companies were reluctant to do that, but the company was reluctant to do it, but was willing to, have the employees get this screening after their workday was done or before their shift started, but not during the work. And then while we were walking around and talking about this, it was a huge campus and there was a whole building that was closed. It was a whole paper manufacturing building. And I said, why is that building closed? Then they said, oh, it's closed for maintenance. So they closed an entire line of production to maintain the machinery, but they were challenging me on whether or not it would be reasonable to have workers walk off the line for 15 or 30 minutes in order to get that same kind of maintenance. Hmm. And it was a magic moment with this employer as I made this point to them. And I won them over with the idea that it does make sense to have their people walk off the line and get this simple screening test.
You know, a fellow I know well who runs a company asked about personal health assessments and biometric screening and all that, and wondered, you know, what's the value in all that? He said something that resonates still today. He said, you know, they get all these results back that are warning lights, but it's like the warning light on your car. The oil light comes on, it doesn't change the oil. You know, you do all these biometric screenings. How do you translate all that into benefit if you're a physician executive to actually make a difference?
Well, this is exactly the point of a physician executive. They have to take data and analytics and they have to convert it into programming, and then they have to create the metrics to demonstrate that the program that's being done has made a difference. If you want to use the example of someone who didn't know that their blood sugar was out of whack, but the biometric screening makes that clear to them for the first time, you and I both know as physicians that the timer's set, and unless we do something to help that employee regulate their blood sugars, they're likely to be destined to be a diabetic for the rest of their life. So there is this period of time where we can take somebody like that from the precipice of a chronic disease and return them to wellness so that they don't have to subject themselves to medication or insulin injection for the rest of their life. I mean, that is an amazing opportunity and an amazing accomplishment, even on an individual patient basis. But imagine if you could do that on a population scale, and you could identify enough people inside an organization so that you might be able to put them into a program together, and they could support each other through the program and right the metabolic wrongs that are going on inside their body at this time. So I think the person who said that to you is right, but that's because they didn't have a physician executive that was taking the bull by the horns and establishing programmatic efforts require promotion, and the physician executive might even recommend to the company that there are incentives for people to engage in a program like that. We certainly want to make it so that there aren't financial barriers for somebody that's on the precipice of becoming diabetic to not get the best that healthcare has to offer to prevent them from becoming one. This is just a single example, but you know, the more important issue, Stan, that you really asked early on, which is, you know, why would a company want to do this? The data is very clear now that companies that really focus on becoming a best practice culture of health and well-being actually have the potential of flattening their healthcare costs. I know that sounds incredulous, but this is what best practice companies are experiencing. In addition, there's very good research that comes out of places like Harvard that shows that for every dollar, dear CEO, that you're spending on healthcare, you're losing $2 to $3 of poor workforce performance. Because we know that when somebody is not feeling their best, they things happen. Like they don't do their work well. They don't do their work on time. They're absent from work. And if this problem that they have is remarkably, overriding in terms of their health, they may even be lost to the workforce and become disabled. All of those are tremendous costs, and they're way bigger when you add them all up than actually the cost of healthcare itself. But even if you look at the healthcare itself, I mean, most employers would like to give their employees raises from time to time, but many of them are not able to do it. All they can possibly do is to continue to cover the increasing premiums related to healthcare. And research has shown that this unrelenting increase in healthcare costs has markedly reduced the ability for companies to provide raises to their employees.
So if I'm going to synthesize what you said into, if I'm making a decision about if I want to put a health assessment program, a risk mitigation program, a biometric screening program in place, I might be better off being sure I've got a physician executive working on my side rather than outsourcing all that to an independent point source vendor, for example.
Yeah, no question. First of all, I don't understand why employers don't see the obvious benefit of this. As you pointed out, when a vendor or a health plan delivers a report to an employer, they often bring their medical leader. And the conversation is markedly elevated when you bring your medical leader. The messaging that I need to deliver on behalf of my employer clients is way different than the message that the medical director of a health plan is likely to deliver. And by the way, with all due respect to medical directors of health plans, I used to be one before I was a physician executive for corporations. The health plan medical leaders are not necessarily fully informed of the issues that face corporations, particularly as it relates to things like occupational health, disability management, workers' comp management, they're not familiar necessarily with the ability of employers to engage in sophisticated communication and marketing campaigns internally and things like that.
Couple more questions for you. By the way, I'm going to put the link to your book in the show notes and also a link to the company that you work for, HealthNext, in show notes also.
Yeah, thank you. So
what has been your most, outside of COVID, what's been your most rewarding experience in the world of physician executive where you really felt you made the biggest difference?
Well, I'm going to answer this a couple ways. I mean, from a sensational standpoint, when I was given the opportunity that I'm most grateful for to serve as the global medical leader of General Electric, it was during the General Electric heyday under Jack Welch and the early Jeff Immelt period, where I was responsible for 350,000 employees and their families worldwide. And we had 136 or so on-site medical clinics at the workplace. Inside these medical clinics at the workplace across the world, there were over 1,000 clinicians. And one of my responsibilities was managing what arguably may have been the largest global network of clinics ever established. I will tell you that when I got to General Electric, there really wasn't much in the way of metrics or even guidance on how to do great work inside those clinics. And perhaps one of my proud moments was when I was able to develop a workplace health center clinic scorecard that had maybe as many as a half a dozen different metrics that each and every clinic worldwide reported on a monthly basis, so that we could get a better handle on things like their compliance with the occupational health requirements, their delivery of quality healthcare for urgent care, and even for supporting chronic conditions, their satisfaction rates, both with the leader of the workplace site and the patients that they served. And we were able to develop this scorecard in a very balanced way, where these metrics were sort of equal in value and each clinic could get a score. And I ultimately, with a push of a button, could determine, you know, which clinics were doing the best job, which ones needed more help. And we could roll these statistics up at the business level, at the corporate level, and even at the regional level. Because, for example, I had a medical director who reported into me to manage the population in India, which was about 40,000 people. And he had ultimately the opportunity to look at his clinics and roll up his India clinics into his, I'll say, dashboard. And that was an amazing undertaking. We needed to leverage 8 core languages. You know, it was really something, and maybe one of my most complex crowning achievements. But in terms of leaving a legacy, Stan, I've been fortunate enough to be able to publish 5 books, and it sort of chronicles this journey that I've been on, where I've been fortunate enough to play at the creative edge of what may be called medical management. And so in my early days, I was committed to making traditional patient management and case management more organized. I was one of the early founders of disease management. I, as you've mentioned already, I've been an early framer of population health and its connection and the connection between health and workforce performance, and now really committed the last 10 years to building benchmark cultures of health and well-being, largely inside of employers. And in that journey, my 5 books have chronicled that pathway. So my first book was on patient management and disease management. My second book was really more dedicated to disease management and the early understanding of population health. And the last 3 editions of this textbook have moved along that path been able to track the science behind the connection of health and performance, and what it really takes to build cultures of health and well-being.
So tell us a little bit about your company, Health Next, and what you do there and what Health Next does.
So, thank you for that. And it shouldn't surprise anybody who's listening that Health Next is the leader in helping enterprises build benchmark cultures of health and well-being. And when we started our research 10 years ago, we took a page out of the book Good to Great. It's a very popular business book. I'm sure many people who are listening know this book. And Jim Collins, who wrote the book, studied good companies that became great and developed a methodology to help other good companies become great. So what we did at Health Next was, for the first 2 years of our operation, we studied the few companies on earth who had benchmark cultures of health and well-being, as demonstrated by the fact that they had flat healthcare costs for an extended period and evidence that their workforces were actually getting healthier over time. When we studied those, we were able to identify over 200 action items that companies can do that could contribute to a best practice culture of health and well-being, and we organized them into 10 best practice pillars. That ultimately led to an assessment tool that Health Next now can deliver to employers, large and small, where we can with about 10 hours of joint work with our employer clients, identify their gaps from best practice, and sequence those gaps into a multi-year strategic plan so they too could enjoy the same thing that employers who have already achieved a benchmark culture of health enjoy. Like flat healthcare costs, sustainably flat healthcare costs, and actually a more productive workplace that provides a competitive advantage.
How do you interact with a company's benefit brokers, benefit consultants, and so forth?
Yeah, so I think, you know, the benefit consultants are doing remarkable work in helping employers shop, and they seek out the best unit cost for each unit of healthcare that that the covered lives inside of an enterprise require. What we do on the HealthNext side is try with the research that we've learned and we can apply to remarkably reduce the need for healthcare services. And so there's a wonderful collaboration that can take place between the work that benefit directors do, human resource people do, consultancies do, and what our physician executives do who are assigned to each one of these clients of ours and who engage in the assessment that leads to a multi-year strategic plan that allows our physician executives to roll up their sleeves as a team member and actually deliver on the tasks that are generated by our platform to get companies to excellence.
In the last 60 seconds, Ray, can you tell me what your vision is for American healthcare and what we need to transform to make it the best ever?
What a wonderful question. And obviously, it's very complicated, but I would like the healthcare delivery system in this country to be honest with the American citizenship. In fact, you know, very good research shows that healthcare delivery has a minor influence on the number of quality years that people live. Overwhelmingly, the greatest influence is the way they live their lives and their lifestyle. And to the extent that we can engage in a cultural transformation that will allow people to eat better, sleep better, exercise more, and moderately consume alcohol and not smoke, we're off to a very good start to give people the promise of a long life where I like to say they're quite likely to be able to dance at their granddaughter's wedding.
Dr. Ray Fabius, thank you so much for being our guest today. It's much appreciated.
Yeah, thank you so much for this opportunity, Stan. It's much appreciated on my side as well.
If you'd like to learn more about the role of physician executives in population health, I put references in the show notes. His book is a good read. If you're running a company, you're likely spending a lot of money on healthcare. Be sure you're spending it wisely.
We hope you've enjoyed the time with our very own Dr. Stan for 360 Degrees of Healthcare with Dr. Stan Schwartz, a part of Zero Studios. Tune in, subscribe, and review our podcast to keep current with the ins and outs of the medical and healthcare industry from the inside out.